gaining an understanding of the long-term pilot shortage. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into this special feature, and thanks for downloading us. Today, we'll hear two more perspectives on a worldwide pilot shortage from the 2008 FAA Forecast Conference. That shortage is estimated by the IATA at about 18,000 pilots per year over the next two decades. Our first perspective today involves the challenges of entering the industry and comes from Captain Ron Levy of the University Aviation Association, who started off with an obvious observation.
A good Christian raising and an eighth grade education ain't going to get you in the door at American Airlines. As Kit said, the airlines are looking for a four-year college degree plus aviation qualifications. There aren't a lot of ways to do that in a fairly efficient manner other than a university aviation program. The University Aviation Association is the organization representing the college and university aviation programs around the country. We have about 120 member schools, and we're in the business of producing people who are going to be your future aviation professionals. This goes beyond pilots. It includes aviation managers and other technical specialty fields. But we're here to talk about pilot training and supply today from our perspective in the university education arena. There's a number of issues. We have recruitment and selection, the physical resources that we have available to train our people, a growing concern about where we will find enough instructors to train all these pilots, the funding issues, which, again, as Kit alluded to, it's a lot of money. Also, training goals and objectives, rationalizing how we train pilots with the demands, the requirements that the airlines are looking for, what they want to see in a pilot. In terms of recruitment and selection, I can tell you for sure, having spent 5 years as the director of an aviation program at a university, that there is no shortage of interested students. When you have the cattle calls at the beginning of the academic year for all the new freshmen, and when you have recruiting visits, and you tell them you have an aviation program where they can become a pilot, a lot of hands go up. Yeah, that sounds like a good idea. Until they find out how much it costs. In addition, many of those who are interested in the programs lack the attitude, the aptitude, and many of them lack the attitude too, to be professional pilots. Universities do not screen for aviation aptitude the way the military does when they're looking at potential pilots. Finally, there is the funding issue. It costs a lot. Many students think they can do it and then discover they can't pay for it. As a result, there is a fairly high attrition rate in flight training. Universities always are short on money. Many changes in the way universities are funded, particularly when there are state schools, which used to receive much larger handouts from the state per student than they do today. That means a lack of funds to modernize the training fleets the universities use. We also have a lack of modern flexible simulators. It's hard to come up with $250,000 or more for a new state-of-the-art glass panel simulator that emulates new aircraft. Perhaps the most critical need in the immediate future is flight instructors. At the universities, virtually all of the instructors are recent graduates of the program, building pilot and command time so they can get hired by a regional carrier. At this moment, the regionals are hiring pilots faster than the universities can produce them. Sort of like eating all your seed corn and having nothing left to plant in the spring. You've put off starvation, but only till next winter. In addition, we're seeing instructors having virtually no real-world flying experience. Their entire flying experience is in the training environment around the local airport. They may have 100 hours of instrument time, but virtually all of them are flight training locally, and they may have only perhaps a few hours of actual in-the-weather experience of going somewhere and coming back. The big issues that are preventing this from getting any better are that, first of all, the recent graduates are not interested in being instructors. That's not what they came in the program for. They came in the program to be airline pilots. And sitting in the right seat of a Cessna 172 teaching touch-and-goes to somebody with 12 hours isn't what they had in mind. And they're not very good at it either. And you put those two together, and it's kind of discouraging. In addition, generally, instructor pay is fairly poor, and they have no benefits. They're contract employees. They may receive $12 or $15 an hour, and no benefits, no vacation, no medical, no health, no nothing. Kit said something about $65,000. Well, that might pay for the flight training a few years ago. It won't pay for it anymore in one of these major programs, including a regional jet transition course. Typically, the cost of a four-year university flight education is $120,000 to $180,000. You're a high school graduate facing that. That's a tough thing to hook up with. How many times can your parents hock their house? The students can't borrow that much themselves. Government loans, government-subsidized loans, are limited to about $25,000 total over 4 years, and only about $2,500 the first year. They wind up with debt loads that are totally incompatible with their initial pay, and they're faced with 10 to 15 years payback once they get out of school. If they get that's assuming they complete the program, and as I said, over half of them don't. But they've still got the debt load. There is a distinct disparity between airline needs and university products. Because, to a great extent, of FAA rules and regulations for licensing and certification, the current university aviation program is designed to produce a light plane general aviation single pilot IFR crew member, somebody who can jump in a Cessna 210 and fly it as left seater here and to somewhere else and back. That's not what the airlines want. They want people who are qualified to be multi-crew crew members in large turbine aircraft. Unfortunately, there's no way to take somebody ab initio and train them as a large crew, multi-crew co-pilot. We need to revisit the licensing and certification process and adjust training accordingly. Unfortunately, if we do that, we will also end the production of flight instructors, because the flight instructors have to be small plane general aviation single pilot IFR pilots. That's another problem. Solutions for instructors: we're going to have to change the paradigm. We're going to have to find ways to encourage career instructors with better pay and benefits. That has a cost impact. We're going to have to encourage second career instructors from air carrier and military retirees. We're going to have to find ways of getting them interested. If you walk into, it's interesting, we do get a huge number of our faculty from the military. If you walk into a UMAA meeting and say, "Excuse me, Colonel," about half the heads will turn around. Funding. The end users are going to have to share some of the cost burden, because our students can't, and the universities aren't in that business. Training goals: we have to look at the MCPL, the multi-crew pilot license model, and see about training in that direction instead of the current FAA direction. That will require some cooperation from the FAA. Finally, we have to recognize the impact of all of this on the recent graduate CFI force.
You'll find video to go with the audio you're hearing today in the archives of aero-tv.net. Look for the special series that's been running each Monday, starting September 8th. When we come back, find out where the shortage is making itself known now and how that will change in the next few years. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways. And you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is General Aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and no ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Welcome back to the Aero News Special Feature. I'm Paul Platt. Our next speaker from the FAA's annual forecast conference is Paul Rice of Airline Pilots Association International.
I'm Paul Rice, first vice president of the Airline Pilots Association International. I'm also one of those 747-400 captains. As Kit pointed out, the bump in the fuselage is no longer for our wallets, as my carrier has been through bankruptcy. I also serve in another capacity, and that is throughout the world, there are various pilot associations, not unlike ALPA. And in fact, there's over 100 of them, and there's an organization that represents those associations. It's called the International Federation of Airline Pilot Associations. And we represent 115,000 plus pilots, and more importantly, just over 100 member associations, which are those pilot organizations. I am the deputy president of that organization also. And as we talk about pilot shortages a little bit today, you're going to hear it's repetitive off of both Kit and Ron's excellent presentations. We're going to hear that the same issues are happening across the world, and I will try to put some of those things in context for you. Full disclosure, however, is always a good thing. And let me tell you that when Kit showed the slide of the very early days of civilian pilots becoming airline pilots at the majors in the late 70s, that was me. In the mid-70s, when the Air Force redid their training plans in the post-Vietnam era, they then withdrew my waiver to become an Air Force pilot and go to the Air Force Academy. So what was I going to do? Because I wore these glasses, and that was going to keep me out of being a professional aviator in those days. Well, I went to one of the schools that Ron just talked about and became a pilot because I wasn't going to take no for an answer. I was stubborn like a lot of pilots tend to be. And later on, my carrier happened to get sued and get the standards were changed, and it was the only carrier available to me actually to get hired. So I got hired, went through this program, and the interesting thing is, my son, who wears the same kind of glasses, 30 years, some years later, his waiver for the Air Force Academy was pulled because, as Kit said, there is a limited supply of military pilots. So he went through the same program I went through, and now he is a 450-hour, almost graduate here in a few weeks. That will be my big pay raise, because you're right. It is very expensive. And he's already had 3 airline interviews, and the answer from the companies that he's interviewed is, well, let us know, give us a call on graduation day, and we'll tell you when you'll start. So it's a very different world out there than it was 30 years ago, 35 years ago, 40 years ago. Let's just begin here, and we'll talk about some of the concerns and the view from the Airline Pilots Association. So let's talk about a bit about the pipeline. You know, we've talked, and you've heard a little bit this morning about the historic career path. It was military. The great training that was afforded the military pilots in different branches of service, not only in this country, but throughout the world, begat the airline pilot. Civilian pilot training was not done. The way that civilian pilot training has become an accepted way to get to the airlines has been through the university training programs. But looking at it a little closer, what you see is the initial entry-level positions. 30, 35 years ago, you went from that Cessna 172 sitting in the right seat being an instructor to maybe a Cessna 310 flying night checks, to then maybe a turboprop like a Beech 99. And then maybe moved across the pedestal in that Beech 99 and started getting your first turbine time. And then you went to maybe the right seat of a brand new Cessna Citation 1. And then maybe you got to be an instructor in that airplane, or maybe in fact you got to be a captain on that airplane in a charter company. And then you went to be an airline pilot. And maybe your first airline pilot job was flying an old Convair 340 for a local service carrier. And after you built some time up then, maybe then you went to become an airline pilot at a major airline. But what happened when you went to those major network carriers? You started in the backseat. So even the military pilots, the well-qualified transport and fighter pilots that came in, even the civilian pilots, the very few that got there, they went to the back seat, the flight engineer seat, and spent years monitoring the other two pilots and learning how an airline worked. What do we have now? Your first job, after being a flight instructor for a very limited amount of time in college while you finish your studies, is sitting in the front seat, albeit on the right side, of a highly sophisticated twin-engine jet airplane, flying at altitudes you've never experienced, flying at airspeeds you've never experienced. And let's hope that the person in the other seat, the captain, has had those experiences. We're all concerned about the shortage. We've talked about a bit about the pipeline. So where is the shortage now? Well, I can tell you there's no shortage at Delta, and there's no shortage at Northwest, and there's no shortage at United and Continental or FedEx or any place. There are people standing in line, thousands of applications of well-qualified pilots on file there. The shortage is in the right seat of the regional or express industry. The question I have for you is, where is the shortage going to be in 5 years? And maybe 5 years is not the right number, because with the change in retirement age to age 65, we may see that shift a little bit, but the question is still germane. Where is the shortage in 3 years or 7 years or 8 years? There's going to be a shortage. We're already seeing the shortage worldwide, and there'll be a shortage here in the United States. And where is it going to be? Because the important part is when it becomes a shortage in the left seat of the express jet airplane. That's when it's going to take that experience out of the cockpit, because you'll have to make the assumption at that point that the experience in the right seat is much like it is today. And once you've removed that experience, that's going to be a concern for us. Let's talk about a few things that ALPA International is looking at specifically. New first officers at express carriers. We are seeing additional line operation experience that is required. It's not a surprise. The initial training syllabus that was created was based on a certain experience level. That experience level, in many instances, is not there now. Now, the progressive express carriers, and we've got John here from American Eagle, are recognizing this and training and changing their training in order to properly educate and prepare these new pilots for their job. But we're not seeing that completely across the board. We're working with a lot of the express carriers through ALPA and through our training committees to modify their syllabuses. But what we also have to do is look at just the way they do their work, the division of duties within a pilot, two-man pilot crew. And in fact, Ron talked about that the ability to work as a crew is still somewhat foreign to these pilots. They've been flying single pilot almost their entire career. Some of the aviation universities are doing a very good job of bringing CRM, or crew resource management, into the initial training programs, but until you experience it live and real time, you're not going to get the full benefit of it. So that's a lot of the training that needs to be done. What about for the other guy or gal in the cockpit? What about for the captain? Well, I used to be a training captain at my airline, and when you check out new captains, the first thing a new captain would always say is, oh man, I'm not going to teach that other guy to fly. That's not my job. That's your job in the training center. I'm just going to go out and be a captain. And I'd say, well, captain, 80% of your job is training the pilots you fly with. That's what is going to be necessary to change the training dynamic for not only new captains at the express carriers, but incumbent captains, and teach them maybe what it is to teach someone else and how best to get attitudes and ideas and standard procedures across that pedestal into the person sitting on the other side.
You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.